Good morning to everybody. I want to take a moment to say to you from Kay and myself, Happy New Year. We are very grateful to your families for having been a blessing to our family throughout this year and throughout another decade. And we count ourselves to be especially blessed to be able to be with the family of God's people for as long a time as we've had the privilege, and we are very grateful to each one of you. I hope you've enjoyed and appreciated also our journey through the very practical letter of James over these last 2 months on Sunday mornings. The gospel of practicality, someone called it. I was thinking about a time when in his later years, one of the times when Kay's mom was in the hospital, she coaxed her dad to do something that he seldom ever did, and that is to stay at somebody's house overnight. He liked to be in his own. Since we were at the hospital a lot, coming and going, Kay had gotten bagels and that kind of thing for an early breakfast. Cream cheese and whatever to go along with all of it. And that morning, she asked her dad if he would try a bagel. He said, I never had a bagel. Well, try one. So she fixed him a bagel, and he got it and took the first bite out of it and said, "This is nothing but bread." He was right. I'm hoping when we think about what James says to our families, we can see that it's nothing but Christian living. Being children of God in our own families, around our children, is what a Christian family is about. It blesses a family. It takes the one in whom our faith is placed and makes him a partner in our life at home, and that blesses all of us in the long run. It also does as we think about a year. You know, if you stop and consider it, a year is, among many other things, a parable for every family to contemplate. A year appears on one horizon, and it looks like a long haul stretching off down through the future. But then from the other horizon, it seems to have departed just as briefly as an hour. It's so soon past. And some of us here can observe that each one is more that way. Clay Joseph had the theory that the years seem to pass more quickly because each one that comes is a smaller fraction of your life. Maybe that's true. A year fills up with schedules and surprises, blessings and burdens, the memorable and the mistaken. And a year challenges values. Every time a year brings things that challenges the values and the beliefs of a family, and it reveals what our loves really are in our lives, enough so that each year really should come, in my opinion, with the "whoever has ears to hear, let him hear" that the parables of Jesus seem to always have come with. Stop and think about what is happening in your life and what it means. We would expect practical James to have something to say about the significance of a year, and that he would say it in a way that could be meaningful in a family's experience. And I think James does that. In fact, "and spend the year" that's in our title today is from James 4 in verse 13, that little phrase, James 4 and verse 13. But James does this not by discussing time. He doesn't launch into a discourse about how time passes and and some theory about that. He does it by addressing a people's plans and their pursuits and their possessions. And he addresses it in a way that is appropriate to people who have a godly grasp on reality, on life as it really is. Now, I want to point out this morning in our study that we can see James thinking about plans and pursuits and possessions in three main places in his letter, and that what he thinks is undeniably real or true to life, and that it needs to be applied and brought to life in our homes. So let's start by identifying the three strands of reality that are in the passages that James brings up when he talks about plans, pursuits, and possessions. In each of these three texts, what James does is to take the fact that so much in our life is brief and unpredictably uncertain and temporary, that it means something to the nature of our experience and to what our endeavors ought to be. He starts out by pointing out that material pursuits are short-lived. They seem to be such a priority to us. They are the things that we get anxious about and worry over and invest our time and our energy in and all of that. But the fact of the matter is, they're sure that they are so shortly lived in our lives. The day before, 2 days before Christmas, my phone dinged, and I got a picture of the marker that has been set at my mother's burial place. I thought about all of the things that lady went through in her lives. All the things maybe that we would have been torn up about from time to time. And how short-lived it all really was. At the time, it seemed like the only thing that could possibly matter. James says in James 1 and verse 11, of the person who has everything, whose pursuits are multiple and successful. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower falls, its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. I believe that last phrase is especially revealing. In the midst of his pursuits, he fades away. It's not discussing here the value or lack thereof of things. He's not getting on to people for having things. He's just observing, you know, in the middle of all of this, it fades away. And it can do it when we didn't know or didn't expect it would happen. The second thing that James touches on is in 4:14. James 4:14. He says, come now, you who say, this is 13, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Notice they've got figured out when they'll go, where they'll go, how long they'll spend, what they'll do, and how it'll all turn out. James says, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. A few years ago, Brother Mike Ireland spoke at a graduation ceremony at Harding University. And he got up and he said, I want to tell you what will happen in a few years. You'll be working in this, maybe there'll be a bunch of people who work in this office or in this place. One of these days, on a morning you did not know and could not have anticipated, your journey will end. And the people who worked around you will all be sad and in grief and in shock. And then in 3 days or so, there'll be somebody else at your desk, and life will have to go on. That's a sobering thought. And I don't mean to be dumping a downer on you today, but and neither does James in these passages, I hope to show in just a second. But it's reality. That's how things can go. We are anticipating a year, a decade, more than that, hopefully. But really, we don't know what tomorrow will bring forth. In fact, not even the rest of today. And then the third thing John or James will say is rust or corrosion of the stuff that we have accumulated in our lives, the things we've spent our effort and attention on, the things we have gathered around as if that's what our life is all about, becomes evidence against us, because righteousness will be vindicated in one way or another. James is, he moves on from the merchants he's just talked about in James 5 to the wealthy landowners of the time who were few, who had way, way, way more than they could ever use or need, and who had a careless attitude toward what was going on in the lives of people around them. The most remarkable evidence or illustration Jesus ever used of this was Lazarus and the rich man. The rich man is clothed in purple and fares sumptuously every day, while at his doorstep there is a guy who's trying to catch a crumb off the table and having a dog to lick the sores. It's a terrible sight, isn't it? Terrible image. But here's what James says to the rich. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. You think of somebody who's got enough grain and stuff stored way more than he'd ever used. It's just rotten out there. And his garments, he can't wear them all, and they're hanging in his closet with the bugs eating holes in them while people are suffering around. Your gold and silver have corroded or rusted. I don't know if gold and silver do that. But you get the point, don't you? It's not being used, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days. You're living in the last days, he says, and you're laying up treasure like you're going to be here forever. And what James is saying is, you look at those three ideas there. Material pursuits are short-lived. We don't control or know everything that happens in our lives. And the use we've made out of them will have a bearing eventually. Now, I said James is not just trying to dump on us. What James is doing is more than just starting with how life is and pointing out that it can't last. He's doing something that Jesus did. He's starting with what Jesus said and pointing out what does matter. What does matter is the soul of a person, the soul of a family. That's what lasts. That's what counts. That's what matters. In the teaching of Jesus, his most penetrating question is in Matthew 16, verse 26. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? You need, and I need to expand that, and more than just possessions. What if I experience every pleasure? What if I go every place? What if I participate in every event? What if I'm a part of every crowd? What if I'm connected with every circle of sights or whatever they are and forfeit my soul? If you get to reading the various translations of Matthew 16 and 26, you notice that the word soul has aspects to it that are not easy to translate. One translated, who forfeits his life. Another one, who forfeits his own self. Another one, who forfeits his personality. Put that together. The life of a family, the persons, the self of the people there, the personalities present, the souls of the people. And that turns out to be the best thing I know to say to our families. More than some kind of group counseling that would be over my head, if we would act like the souls of the people who live in our family is the most important thing we have, it would bless us and it would help us over time. In Luke 12 and verses 19 and 20, Jesus' other famous rich man's story, the guy's blessed beyond measure. He wants to just tear down his barns and build bigger ones. And I'll say to my soul, soul! Remember, that's what we just said is the most important thing. You have ample goods laid up for many years, as if the soul only needs goods. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. Notice the soul in many years. But God said to him, fool, this night, not many years, your soul is required of you. It doesn't have stuff. And the things you've prepared, whose will they be? Do you guys like driving through the Ozarks and taking notice of the old barns? For some reason, I appreciate that. Gets my attention. So I found an old poem that I've collected. I looked upon a farm one day that once I used to own. The barn had fallen to the ground. The fields were overgrown. The house in which my children grew, where we had lived for years, I turned to see it broken down and brushed aside the tears. Then I looked upon my soul one day to find it too had grown with thorns and thistles everywhere, the seeds neglect had sown. The years had passed while I cared for things of lesser worth. The things of heaven I let go while minding things of earth. That'll have an impact on your family if you do that. It's not because the preacher said it, or it's just reality. These three things. The strands of reality before us here, the odd thing about it in James, they do not produce discouraged, downhearted, hopeless, despairing, weak people. When combined with faith, the faith of Christ, the Lord of glory, they produce people and families who are characterized by a sense of honor and dignity and confidence and strength. How is that possible? How can you get that from this? Put faith in the Lord in the mix. And you come away saying some things as a family. These are our normal, the normal assumptions that occur in our lives together. And go back and look with me at the passages where our three markers have been laid down. The first one from chapter 1 and verses 9 and 10, I'll paraphrase its application. In our family, we fashion our pursuits in view of the fact that God raises up the servant, that God exalts the humble, that God gives victory to the one who seems to have been defeated. That is the presumption of faith in Christ. James says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. and the rich in his humiliation. Because like the flower of the grass, he'll pass away. How can you rejoice in that? Well, the image of the flower of the grass that the end of verse 10 and verse 11 use is really from Isaiah 40 in verses 6 through 8. In the New Testament, Peter takes the same illustration and says, this is what the gospel offers. The gospel offers something which abides. It offers something which endures forever. It offers something which is the gift of God through the work of Christ. It won't fade away. You don't have to worry about what it'll be tomorrow or next year. It'll allow you to make good use of what you have now. One of the old writers I found commented about the being the exaltation or the humiliation here for the lowly brother or the rich. Both of them depend on what God gives. One writer says, God gives more than the poor man lacks or the rich man possesses. The poor man is exalted, the rich man's humiliated, because both of them end up finding out from the gospel that we all really depend on the gift of God. In a family, that message gets sent in schedules, pursuits, activities, the things that we spend our time on, the things we're dedicated to, the things that excite us, the things that enthuse us, the things we invest ourselves in. What are they in your family? Are they real? The second thing that gets woven into the life of people of faith is we make our plans with an attitude of dependence on God and in happy recognition of His will and believing that this is the way we get the very best out of life. Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, the prophet had said, I know, O Lord, that the way of man is not in himself, that it is not in man who walks to direct his steps. And I think James takes this and applies it in James 4, 15. Instead, that is, instead of all your planning as if you were in charge and you knew everything, instead you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. If the Lord wills, if the Lord wills. Brother Woods, in his commentary on James, makes the point that we as the Lord's people are to understand, even if we don't say, that God's will always takes preference or precedence over our own. A person who loves God and who respects His will, who wants to please Him, desires always that God's will overrule his own in the affairs of life. And Brother Woods goes ahead to explain, it's not just the reciting of a formula. God willing, or if the Lord will is willing. Usually we add, and the creek don't rise. We'll do. No, it's not that. It is actual, humble belief that the Lord is involved in the events of our lives. And that while events may come that surprise or that don't make sense, God will still be in charge and won't let us be tempted above what we're able to bear, and will with the temptation make a way of escape, and will strengthen us so that we can endure. And once again, that message gets communicated in the family in its prayers, in its anticipation, in its hopes, and in its dreams. And then, the third application, we use our possessions as His blessings in the service of righteousness, with a heart for others, and with the view toward the time to come. James 5, verses, I'll start last part of verse 3. You've laid up treasure in the last days. And he goes ahead here, James does, to say to the people that he's addressing that they have neglected the cause of righteousness. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed our fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. And here's the issue. You've lived on earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. That's a challenging statement, isn't it? It's no secret that in our time, the questions of social justice are perplexing. The gaps that grow in people's lives are political debates back and forth. But for the Lord's people, compassion for the souls of people and for what difference that makes in life moves and motivates, or at least it should, in the use we make of the gifts we've given. And in each family, that has to be communicated in actions and what we do as a family. Usually it can't be done just through the church treasury, as important as that kind of giving might be. The concern for people extends to the use we make of all the gifts that God gives us. So pursuits, plans, possessions. These are the ways the real values of our family are not only formed, but also revealed. It takes place not just once a year, but daily, and daily year after year. In this year, when we've spent so much time trying to think about the way one generation is involved with another and may be impacted by another or may impact another. And at the conclusion of our reading through James's letter, I thought it would be appropriate to finish with this reading from Psalm 102. I'm going to read some selected verses. Verse 4, "My heart is struck down like grass and has withered. I forget to eat my bread." Verse 11, "My days are like an evening shadow. I wither away like grass. But you, O Lord," verse 12, "are enthroned forever. You are remembered throughout all generations. You will arise and have pity on Zion," your people, in other words. It's the time to favor her. The appointed time has come. And then skip down to verse 25. "Of old, you laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will remain. They will wear out like a garment. You will change them like a robe, and they'll pass away. But you are the same, and your years have no end. The children of your servants shall dwell secure. Their offspring shall be established before you." Make it possible, please, for your children to be the children of the Lord's servants. They'll dwell secure, if you will. You might be here today having been thinking about this and wanting to make that beginning. Make the good confession. Be buried with Christ in baptism. Be raised up to walk in newness of life. If we could help you to do that, it would be our great joy. Maybe there's someone here who needs the prayers of his brothers and sisters in the Lord. That's what a congregation is for. If we can help you in that way, please let us know either way by coming to the front here while we stand and sing this song.